We are, according to Dan Gardner, living at a time where we are the safest and healthiest human beings who have ever lived. And as well, despite that, we tend to think of the worst. We hear news stories about cancers, about environmental concerns, about contaminations, about toxins, about chemicals, terrorism, threats to our children, abductions, killings, murders, all sorts of things that are going on. And we end up with the impression that somehow we are at most risk now in our lives than we have been ever before. Dan Gardner is a columnist and senior writer for the Ottawa Citizen. He specializes in criminal justice and other investigative issues. He's trained in history and law and has worked as senior policy advisor to the Premier and Minister of Education before turning to journalism in 1997. His writing has received numerous awards, including the National Newspaper Award, Amnesty International's Media Award, and others. And his new book and first book, Risk, The Science of Politics and Fear, has just been released. And I welcome Dan to the studio. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Barry.
Now, you were here last year while you were writing the book, and we talked a bit about risk and risk perception. And had the driving force for writing the book, had that changed over the course of the year? Or what were some of the factors that said, hey, you know, this is an area that's very interesting for me to try and shed some light on?
Well, I would say the driving force got more driving. As I dug into the research, my impression, my belief that we are in fact the safest and healthiest human beings who ever lived, and we are increasingly worried, my belief in these two things grew, and that got me awfully concerned. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense. You know, there are a lot of statistics on this. I won't deluge your listeners with them. Here's one, just one thing to remember. At the beginning of the 20th century, only 100 years ago, one child in five in the United States would die before the age of five. That was true of poor children. That was true of rich children. That's how dangerous life was for children only 100 years ago. Of course, what's happened in the interval? Child mortality has absolutely plummeted. Now it's less than 1% in the United States. Same here. It is astonishing. What has happened to the safety of human beings, as indicated by our lifespan, which has dramatically improved, is absolutely unprecedented in human history. In the entire history of our species, all 2 million years of it, what we are living in right now is a golden age. Okay, how many people think of it that way? No, it's a big, scary world. You turn, as you said, you turn on the television, and it's just a child is murdered. There's a war. There's bombings. That's chemical contamination, plague, fear, fire, flee. You know, it's it's a strange environment. People really just don't appreciate how good we have it, and so that's what the book is about. How is it possible that we could have it this good, but at the same time we are so worried?
Well, and this brings me to starting off with a few definitions of words that you use throughout the book to try and describe the process on how people approach these problems, especially with the focus on negative news. Why is it we gravitate towards negative news? We don't hear good news stories. We hear bad news stories all the time. And you mentioned things such as gut and head with reference to how a person approaches a risk. Something called the example rule or the good-bad rule or confirmation bias or questions people say will say, well, do I really, you know, should I be better safe than sorry when making decisions? Do I avoid this altogether even if there's no evidence to say it's bad for me? If I think it's potentially bad, I'll just stay away from that. Can you define some of these for us and then we can get into some more of the details?
Fundamentally, the most important thing to remember is this. Our thoughts are the product of our brain, and our brain is the product of our evolution, and that evolution did not occur in the modern world. That evolution occurred over the hundreds of thousands, even millions of years, in which we were living in bands of hunter-gatherers of 20 or 30 people. We lived in that environment, that Stone Age environment. That is the environment that shaped our brains. And that is, and the brains which we are using even now to think and to speak. Now, our brains are wonderful things, okay? I don't want to disparage the human brain. The human brain has accomplished many wonderful things. However, what cognitive psychologists have discovered about the modern human brain, which again, I want to emphasize, is the product of evolution and the Stone Age environment, is that we have not one but two minds. The one mind, of course, is the obvious one. It's the one that's thinking to these, you know, listening to these words now. You're consciously thinking. It's the conscious mind. I call it in the book head. And the other mind is the unconscious mind. I call it in the book gut. And the reason why I call it gut and head is because of this. The unconscious mind communicates to us in the form of intuitions, hunches, feelings. Someone will say, I have a gut feeling. I'm not sure about this, but I have a gut feeling. You say that when you have a sense that something is true, but you're not really sure why. Well, that judgment has come to you from your unconscious mind. While the person who's listening to you might think that's got to be wrong, and what will they say? They'll say in response, hey, stop it. Use your head, right?
That's right.
And that means stop and think consciously about this, okay? So cognitive psychology has said we have a conscious mind, head, we have an unconscious mind, gut. The essential point about gut is this. Gut is fast. That's its great defining characteristic. Your unconscious mind produces quick snap judgments. And that's really useful if you're living as a hunter-gatherer on the plains of Africa. Because if something moves in the long grass, you don't have time to look up the statistics on lion prevalence, okay? Right. You have to form a snap judgment and you have to react now, okay? Gut is really, really good at doing that. And that's why gut had became hardwired into the brain, because it helped us survive, okay? Now, how does gut do this? How does it make these snap judgments when head is so slow? Because, of course, head's getting out the textbook, you know, the dictionary, and it's looking up lion prevalence, right? How does gut do this so quickly? Well, it does it so quickly because it doesn't deal with all the information available, right? What it does is instead it has a cognitive psychologists call them heuristics and biases, which is a completely forgettable term. A heuristic, a bias is simply a tendency. If a condition is present, you tend to go with that result. If a heuristic is a rule of thumb, a very simple one. So, for example, the availability heuristic, that's another forgettable term. In my book, I call it the example rule because it's a little clearer, I think. It's simply this. If I can think of an example of something, if I can recall an example of something very easily, then that thing is probably common and it's probably likely to happen again. If I have to struggle to think of an example of something, then that thing's probably not common and not likely to happen again. That's a really nice, simple, quick rule. Mm-hmm. And your unconscious mind uses that, you know, if I say to you, breast cancer, you know, how likely is that to strike a woman? You know, what's going to happen is instantaneously your unconscious mind is going to go looking for an example of this. And if you can come up with an example quickly, you say the danger is high. If you struggle to come up with an example, then your intuition will tell you that the danger or the risk is lower. Very often that works, which of course is, you know, why it's hardwired into us again. But it can also go haywire. And this is where we get into serious trouble. If I say to you, terrorism, what immediately happens? You know, I guarantee you that almost everyone who just heard that word now has an image in their brain. The image is of 9/11, right? How easy is it for you to recall that example? Extremely,
right.
Fantastically easy, right? It's almost impossible to miss.
Right.
Well, your unconscious mind is going to say, using the example rule, it's going to say, it was incredibly easy to come up with an example. That means this thing is common. That means it's likely to happen again. That means be afraid. Well, that's totally contrary to what the statistics say. In fact, the risk of terrorism is just, to an individual, is infinitesimal. Over the last 40 years, only about 14,000 people were killed in international terrorist incidents. That works out to something like an average of 372 people per year. Those are all tragedies. I don't want to minimize that. That's a global figure, by the way. But to keep it in perspective, more than 500 people a year drown in swimming pools in the United States alone. So it's actually an incredibly tiny thing. But your unconscious mind, using the rules which were hardwired in a totally different environment, the Stone Age environment,
right,
gives you a conclusion that says, be afraid of terrorism, whereas the statistics, which only your rational mind can understand, says, no, actually the risk is extremely low, don't worry about it, okay? Now the question is, who's in charge? Is it your rational mind, is it head, or is it gut? And what cognitive psychologists have discovered, and I think proved pretty conclusively, is that most people, when they experience a strong intuition, oh, this seems right, they go with their gut. Now, generally, that's not going to get you in trouble, but it can get you in trouble. And to go to terrorism, after 9/11, a lot of people were afraid of flying, mm-hmm. right? The statistics showed that flying is absolutely safe. It's far safer than driving. Even if there were more hijackings, it would still be safe. Well, after 9/11, because people's intuitions, because their primitive minds were telling them that this was dangerous, stay away, they fled from the airports. And there's one researcher who crunched the numbers and looked at the uptick in automobile traffic and deaths that resulted. And what he concluded was that the shift from airports to American roads killed more than 1,500 people. Which is to say, that's six times more than the number of people who were on the planes who were killed on September 11th. So that mistake of their intuition cost a lot of people their lives. And there are many other cases in which, if our intuition guides us wrong, we can be endangered.
When we come back, I want to follow up. What was interesting is you mentioned for cancer, you mentioned breast cancer. I want to get into when you mention breast cancer and you say, I know someone who is 30 years old who had breast cancer, yeah. and how that skews the interpretation of what women think about what's going to happen to them, because there was some data that you had that actually looked at that very question. As well, still want to talk about the good, bad rule and a whole lot more stuff coming up. In conversation with Dan Gardner, author of Risk, The Science and Politics of Fear. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
You're listening to Dr. Barry Dworkin on Sunday House Call.